So quantitative tightening is officially over. And the immediate expectation, you know, across the noisy parts of the market is fireworks.
Absolute fireworks. But the data, it's telling a deeply patient, a much more structural story. Liquidity is like a tide. It's this massive, slow-moving force.
Tides don't just rush in instantly.
Exactly. They don't rush in the moment you, you know, remove a blockage.
So today, we're analyzing why the crypto market's reaction to these huge macro policy shifts is always delayed. We're going to use the deep historical context from the sources you shared. Welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today is pretty straightforward, but it really requires us to slow down our thinking. We're going to dissect the market reaction to the Federal Reserve officially ending quantitative tightening, or, you know, QT.
Yeah, and this isn't just about watching a ticker for the next few weeks. That's the mistake most people are making right now. This is about actually understanding the subtle, kind of slow-moving mechanics of global market liquidity.
And finding patience in a world that is just designed for instant gratification. So we're analyzing two key assets based on the source material. First up is the big one, Bitcoin BTCX. And we're looking at it through a macro lens.
And then second, it's fascinating counterpart, Bitcoin Cash, BCH Audex, through a purely technical lens. It's a really interesting contrast.
So think of this as looking under the hood of the whole crypto engine.
Yeah, to see which parts are just idling, you know, waiting for that fuel of returning liquidity, and which parts are secretly already coiled up. They're preparing for this potentially explosive mechanical release. We're going to spend a lot of time on the historical lag of macro policy. And then dive into a really cool side-by-side of BCH and Zcash.
Okay, let's unpack this central idea right away, because it is the single biggest disconnect between what the market seems to feel and what the hard data is telling us. The sources are really clear. QT ending does not mean liquidity suddenly floods back in.
No.
So we need to define exactly what QT is and then what ending it actually means.
That precision is everything. So quantitative tightening, QT, is just when the Fed stops reinvesting the payments it gets from all the bonds it holds.
So when those bonds mature.
Right. When they mature, the money just kind of vanishes from the banking system. It shrinks the Fed's balance sheet. And critically, it removes liquidity. It's a drain. It's a deliberate draining mechanism.
So the key insight here, and it's almost deceptively simple, is that ending QT just means the drain stops.
Yeah.
That's it.
That is it. That's the moment the Fed hits the button. But for the market, it doesn't mean new money, you know, fresh risk-seeking liquidity is instantly flowing back in to replace the trillions that were just taken out.
Right. And that analogy we were using earlier really helps make this tangible.
It's the bathtub analogy. It's perfect. So imagine you have this huge bathtub and you've been letting water drain out of a massive pipe for months. When the Fed ends QT, all they're doing is putting the stopper back in that drain.
The water stops leaving.
The water stops leaving. But the tub doesn't instantly refill. You have to wait for someone to turn the faucet on. You have to wait for new capital to start flowing in. And even then, it takes time. It takes volume for the water level to rise enough to actually matter in a market like Bitcoin.
And that's why the impact is always, historically, so delayed.
Always.
So to really get a feel for this delay, we have to look at the historical template. The sources really hammer this home. The 2019 QT cycle.
It's invaluable. The 2019 period gives us a playbook for patience. So initially, after that QT cycle ended, Bitcoin did get a respectable rally.
Right. There was some relief.
A little bit of relief. Yeah. Priced in by speculators. It moved from about $8,300 up to $10,300. So a decent 24% move.
A decent move, but not the parabolic rush everyone is expecting right now.
Not at all. And this is where the lesson gets kind of painful for anyone with a short time horizon. The price didn't just skyrocket from there. Instead, the market went into this grueling long period of just sideways compression.
So much uncertainty. The sources note the BTC chopped sideways for months.
For months. Just showing this deep indecision because liquidity was still scattered. It wasn't pooling together.
And what was the psychology like back then? I mean, during those months?
Think about it. We call that lag period one. The QT drain was plugged, but the price was stuck. So every day you had analysts, media, everyone debating if the relief rally was already over.
Investor confidence must have been just draining away.
It was eroded by the chop. And that sideways action, it wasn't quiet, it was volatile. It was designed to liquidate both the short-term bulls and the bears.
And that kind of environment, that choppiness, it just creates so much vulnerability. Even with the macro policy looking better, the system was weak.
It was weak. And this all led to that dramatic external shock, which was COVID crash in early 2020. That hammered the market all the way down to $3,800.
Wow.
And it illustrates a critical point. Ending QT removes one headwind, right? It removes the drain, but it doesn't build a fortress against some other global event coming out of left field.
Let's really drill down on the timelines from the sources, because this is the core of the whole patient's argument. There are two distinct lag periods after the 319 QT ended, and the total time is just, it's astonishingly long.
Yeah, so lag period one, that was the initial indecision phase. It ran from the end of QT until a clean directional move finally started to take shape, this whole phase of sideways chop, and then that collapse. It lasted a brutal 164 days.
164 days. That's over 5 months of just grinding volatility.
Yeah, where most short-term capital was probably just destroyed.
I remember that time so clearly. My phone was just full of panicked messages, people asking if crypto was dead, if the whole halving narrative was broken.
Was the experiment over?
Right, was the whole thing a failed experiment? That psychological fatigue over 164 days, that's the real cost of waiting for liquidity to come back.
Yeah.
It's designed to wear you out.
It is. And that's just the prelude. So lag period two starts once Bitcoin begins recovering from that low, around $4,000. From that moment, the market had to slowly, steadily rebuild confidence and march toward that 2021 peak. The sources note it took another 211 days, that's almost 7 more months, before the trend became so strong, it was just undeniable.
That's when the big institutions really felt confident coming in.
That's when conviction truly arrived.
So if you add those two periods up, 164 days of painful chop and collapse, plus another 211 days for the trend to really confirm itself, we get to about 375 days.
Over a full year.
A full year. That number, 375 days, you just can't overstate it. It's the historical anchor that shows why expecting some sudden aggressive bull market to start today is just, it's disconnected from how these things actually work.
It's completely disconnected from reality.
But I'd have to push back on that a little bit. I mean, isn't relying on 2019 data maybe a little flawed given today's context?
Oh, so?
We have Bitcoin ETFs now. We have this massive, easy institutional plumbing that just didn't exist back then. The whole infrastructure is stronger. The regulations are clearer. Couldn't that compress the lag period from 375 days down to, I don't know, maybe 150?
That is a fundamental question, and it's a necessary one.
Mm.
And yes, the ETFs definitely change the velocity at which capital can enter the market.
The on-ramp is smoother.
Much smoother. But it doesn't necessarily change the availability or the willingness of that capital to move in the first place. The sources suggest that the big institutions still need certainty from the main driver, which is the Fed.
So the ETFs are just tools. They don't create the liquidity themselves.
Exactly. They don't create the liquidity needed to use them.
Okay, so let's shift the context then.
Yeah.
We have to place the current environment in the right part of the cycle, because 2024 is structurally very different from 2019.
Very different.
The sources are pretty strong on this. They suggest we're in a late cycle zone right now, which is fundamentally different from the early cycle expansion we saw after the 2019 QT ended.
That distinction is paramount. In 2019, after QT, the economy and asset valuations were just ripe for a fresh expansion. New money had obvious places to go for high impact.
But today?
Today, in this late cycle zone, the environment is saturated. Liquidity isn't gone, but it is deeply scattered. It's stuck in money market funds, it's in high yield debt, it's in safe assets like cash.
It's not pooling neatly or aggressively into risk assets like crypto.
No, investors are cautious, they're selective.
And on top of that, the macro catalysts just feel so much weaker compared to what drove the 2020 and 2021 cycle.
So much weaker, we don't have that global coordination of central banks easing policy or those huge emergency fiscal injections that fueled the last parabolic move.
The current mood is more restraint and complexity.
Which leads us directly to the core problem, the big dampener that the sources highlight, policy uncertainty. Markets hate it. They just recoil from policy uncertainty.
Especially complex, volatile markets like crypto.
Right, because it makes institutional planning and allocation incredibly difficult. If you're managing a $1 billion fund, you need a stable backdrop to justify putting a big chunk of that into a volatile asset.
Let's break down how an institution might think about Fed Chair Jerome Powell. His term runs until May 2026.
Right.
That fact alone guarantees months, maybe more than a year, of uncertain policy direction. It's not that they worry Powell will crash the market tomorrow.
No, the worry is that without a clear 2-year runway of stable policy Any big allocation they make today could be undercut by a surprise, hawkish shift.
Like a sudden decision to restart tightening or aggressively raise rates.
Exactly. And that would force them to liquidate their position at a loss. They are playing a multi-year game, and the Fed is the referee. If the ref keeps changing the rulebook every 6 months, what's the institutional strategy?
You wait on the sidelines.
You wait. They would much rather miss the first 20% of a move up than risk a 50% drawdown because of some unexpected policy change. That explains why all that scattered liquidity is staying scattered.
So this cautious, data-driven view has to contend with the, you know, the relentless optimism that's always in the crypto space. So let's talk about that moment of wonder, that cognitive dissonance the sources found. Let's talk about the Livermore speculative model.
The Livermore speculative model, yeah, it's a classic technical framework. It comes from the great speculators of the past, and it's used to map these huge parabolic cycles.
And it defines market moves not by time, but by human psychology, right? Accumulation, markup, and distribution.
That's it. Accumulation is the quiet phase where the smart money is buying low.
Mm-hmm.
Markup is the explosive part where price goes parabolic. And distribution is the top where that smart money sells into the public frenzy.
So where are we now, according to that model?
Well, the source material notes that if you strictly follow the technical phases of this model, BTC looks like it's following its early accumulation phase perfectly. The structure suggests it's just gathering energy for the next markup phase.
And that model projects what?
Based purely on mathematical symmetry and technical potential, that model projects an aggressive rally that could potentially take Bitcoin's price above an astonishing $200,000.
Whoa. Okay, that is a colossal prediction. Imagine scaling that aggressive, you know, mathematically pure technical projection against all the structural hurdles we just laid out. The 375-day lag, the scattered liquidity, the policy gridlock.
It's a huge disconnect.
That 200K projection is like the absolute technical potential of the asset. It's the pure symmetry of the chart, and it makes you stop and rethink every single macro headwind.
It's the tension. It's that cognitive gap we have to manage as analysts, because right after showing that technical promise, the source delivers a big reality check.
Right. Right.
If we look at the real-world factors right now, the late-cycle liquidity, the political gridlock, the weak catalysts, that 200K target, while maybe technically possible, it feels almost impossible to achieve in the short or even intermediate term, especially if you stick to that 375-day playbook.
And that tension is very real. I gotta admit, I still wrestle with conflicting signals like this myself. It's just profoundly difficult to synthesize the beautiful symmetry of a model like Livermore's with the messy, difficult, grounded macroeconomic realities we're facing.
It is.
I mean, how do you reconcile the fact that if we hit 200K in the next 6 months, every single macro assumption we've made today about slow liquidity is just fundamentally wrong?
You reconcile it by staying grounded in the data that shows the historical precedent while still acknowledging the potential of the market. Our job isn't to predict the black swan that triggers 200K. It's to manage risk based on the probabilities of slow structural change.
So based on that historical lag and the current cautious environment, the sources anticipate a waiting game. It's composed of two distinct phases.
Right. Phase one is expected to last roughly 3 to 6 months from now, from the end of QT. In this period, we should probably expect more sideways movement. Maybe a mild upward drift, but that's it.
So this is the market just consolidating, absorbing the fact that the drain is plugged, but still waiting for the faucet to turn on.
Exactly. Still waiting for the fuel to arrive. And phase two, that's the actual start of the rewarded move for patient holders. That's expected to take 6 to 12 months after phase one ends.
Wow. So this full timeline is needed for any robust, strong, undeniable trend to finally form.
Yeah. In short, the most dangerous thing you can do right now is mistake the plugging of the drain for the turning on of the faucet. We are in a slow structural reset.
So the key takeaway from this whole BTC segment is simple, really. Don't expect short-term fireworks.
No.
Treat this as the quiet, slow, almost invisible start of a long liquidity reset that will reward patient BTC holders, but only after they've waited for the better part of a year.
That's it.
Given the detailed historical precedent from 2019, which showed a total stabilization and trend confirmation time of 375 days, what is the realistic total timeline listeners should anticipate for a strong, confirmed trend to form post-QT?
History strongly suggests bracing for 6 to 12 months post-consolidation for a trend to solidify, potentially over a year in total.
That clarity on the patient macro game for BTC is essential. Now let's pivot entirely to the technical world and turn our attention to Bitcoin Cash, BCHXX. Here, the story isn't about global liquidity flow at all.
No, it's about local supply and demand dynamics and pure technical compression. We're looking at a really clear and powerful technical structure on the long-term chart for BCH. It's moving inside what analysts call a long, multi-year descending triangle.
A pattern that's been forming since 2024 and could resolve dramatically toward 2026.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Okay, let's define that structure meticulously. A descending triangle has two key characteristics that define this compression. First, you have a clear series of lower highs over a long time.
Right, that's the ceiling being pressed
down. And those lower highs are a powerful sign of persistent seller pressure.
It's huge. Every time BCH rallies, sellers step in at a lower price than the last peak. It shows this continuous distribution, weakening buyer conviction at higher levels. The ceiling is just steadily coming down.
But then you have the second crucial characteristic, which is the base. The base is a steady, rising trend of higher lows.
And that's the opposite. It indicates robust accumulation on the floor. Buyers are willing to step in a little higher each time the price dips, and they're absorbing that seller exhaustion. They are slowly, patiently building a solid floor under the price.
And the implication of that structure is it's just screening compression.
It is. You have a psychological ceiling being pressed down by sellers and a structural floor being lifted by buyers. It's exactly like a massive rubber band being slowly and steadily tightened over years, getting ready for a large, maybe even violent move once one of those boundaries finally gives way.
From a technical standpoint, how do institutional traders even approach a pattern like this? So long term, do they try to trade the little moves inside the range, or do they just wait?
For large capital, trying to trade the internal chop of a multi-year compression like this is just high risk, low reward. The smart money waits.
They see the energy building up.
They recognize that the structure is accumulating energy. They might place some small bets near that rising floor, near the higher lows, but their primary strategy is to just wait for the resolution. They know that when this kind of structure breaks, especially after years, the move that follows is usually proportional to the time it's spent compressing.
So recently we've seen a smaller, more positive move that suggests some of that immediate downward pressure is lifting.
That's right. BCH broke out of a shorter-term falling wedge pattern. That gave it the immediate sort of small-scale energy it needed to push the price off the lower end of that big range.
So the immediate goal now is to test that major resistance. It's pushing back toward the descending ceiling of that multi-year triangle, which sits right near the psychological and technical $600 level.
And that's the first real hurdle in this whole journey to release that compressed energy. This brings us to the immediate tactical decision points. So, decision point one, if BCH can get a confirmed daily or weekly close above that $600 line, and it has to be on strong volume.
Volume is key.
Volume confirmation is everything. That would signal a preliminary but pretty significant shift in control. It would suggest the market is starting to see that the higher lows are winning this internal battle.
And decision point two is just as important for risk management. If it fails, if the price stalls and volume disappears, and it can't close above 600.
Then it just reinforces the pattern. It stays trapped inside that long consolidation. It stays quiet, gathers more energy, and just delays any major move. It reinforces that macro need for patience we talked about.
What's really fascinating here is how the sources use this comparative analysis to frame the whole structure. BCH and Zcash are highlighted as these classic examples of what the sources call early generation coins.
Right. These are the older, large cap alts that had a huge initial run, but then they really struggled to integrate or evolve with the changing market dynamics. It led to years of just stagnation.
And they share this really similar, protracted life cycle pattern over multiple market cycles. It's striking when you put their charts side by side.
It's almost a repeatable blueprint. It's for assets that survive the initial hype, go into hibernation, and then reawaken when the market conditions are finally perfect.
And that life cycle has three clear phases. First, there's that massive initial blow-off, top-to-peak euphoria, where the coin hits its highest value against Bitcoin.
Then comes phase two, years of painful, soul-crushing, sideways compression and decline. This is what eliminates almost all the short-term retail interest and forces out all the weak hands.
And then finally, phase three, a sharp explosive rally.
But that only happens once market liquidity structurally returns. That's the BTC macro play we discussed. And critically, when the available circulating supply has thinned out substantially.
Because long-term holders have soaked up all the cheap supply.
Exactly. And the weak hands are long gone. BCH right now is just grinding away inside that compression zone. It's completing phase two.
This is where Zcash, ZEC, becomes the perfect blueprint, because Zcash already executed this third phase.
It's the perfect template to predict BCH's potential path. Zcash broke out violently from its own multi-year base structure. It didn't drift higher. It printed a significant, almost vertical move.
Which just demonstrated the immense potential energy that gets released from this kind of resolved compression.
Right. It proved that this class of older, established, but forgotten assets is not dead. They're just dormant.
Can we detail that supply thinning process a bit more? In the years leading up to the ZEC breakout, who was selling?
It was mostly retail traders or small funds that just got exhausted by years of going nowhere, years of volatility. So they were selling at lower and lower prices. And on the other side, who was accumulating? Long-term holders, patient whales, conviction funds who understood that eventually that fundamental scarcity had to meet returning macro liquidity.
And the vertical nature of ZEC's breakout is also key, right?
So key. When the available supply gets that thin, even a moderate amount of new money coming in, that returning liquidity tide, it can't find enough sellers to satisfy the demand.
So the price has to move up dramatically to entice people to sell.
It has to. That gap between demand and available supply is what creates that violent vertical price action.
And BCH appears to be in the exact same coiled, compressed state that Zcash was in just before its own dramatic breakout.
It does. The core message is that these old large cap alts can look completely dead, forgotten, irrelevant for years, and then sentiment flips. That technical compression releases its energy in a short, explosive burst.
It's a study in asymmetry. Years of pain for a few weeks of gain.
Exactly. But we have to stress, BCH is still in the climbing phase. It's moving slowly, and it is still far from what we would call the true decision zone.
The point where the risk of falling back into that compression range is significantly reduced.
Right, where you have trend confirmation. That major resistance area, the true technical ceiling that defines this whole multi-year trend, it sits significantly higher than that immediate $600 hurdle.
The real ceiling is around $724.
$724. That level is crucial because it's not just some random line on a chart. It represents a massive area of pooled liquidity. This is where a huge number of past transactions happened, where former support became resistance.
And where a large group of trapped sellers probably have their get-me-out-of-break-even orders waiting.
And their stop losses. This leads to a potential short squeeze scenario. If BCH pushes through 724 with big volume, it's going to hit those seller stop losses, which triggers automatic buy orders to cover short positions.
Creating a cascade.
Yeah, a cascade that rapidly eliminates selling pressure and creates a vacuum above that level, which could lead to a rapid, violent breakout. A vertical move, just like ZEC showed us.
So the strategy recommendation here following that ZEC guide is extreme patience. It's mirroring our advice for Bitcoin.
Exactly. We don't need to rush in now and risk getting trapped in the internal range chop. That's the definition of superior risk management.
If we look back at the ZEC pattern, its strong, confirmed, low-risk move only really started after it broke its major ceiling resistance.
Mm.
So applying that logic to Bitcoin Cash means waiting for a confirmed, high-volume breakout. And close above that $724 ceiling, that's the safer entry point.
And that waiting strategy, it significantly reduces the risk of getting shaken out during more compression. It keeps your investment aligned with a confirmed, undeniable trend that has structural support, rather than just guessing early in this long consolidation phase.
Patience here isn't about missing the opportunity.
No, it's about maximizing the probability of a successful outcome once the energy is truly released.
If ZEC is the blueprint for early generation alts coming out of a long compression, what is the single most important price level for BCH that must be broken to absolutely confirm that the long-term multi-year trend is finally changing?
The critical high-volume breakout point to confirm the macro trend reversal and signal major risk reduction is the $724 resistance level.
We've covered two fundamentally different yet equally powerful themes today. Macro patience for Bitcoin and technical compression for Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, and for BTC, the macro message is just clear and structural. The market needs time. We saw the historical precedent is over a year to fully reflect the end of QT.
The money has stopped leaving the system, but its return is a slow structural shift.
Right. Complicated by all that late cycle policy uncertainty. We should probably expect 3 to 6 months of just market drift before any aggressive, meaningful trend starts to form.
And then for BCH, we analyze that powerful, long-term technical setup, that multi-year descending triangle. We saw that immense coiling structure, a descending ceiling meeting a rising floor.
A classic pattern for these forgotten assets. And it's an example of waiting for a clear, decisive technical signal informed by that ZEC blueprint rather than just speculating early inside a narrow range.
So both of these assets, despite having different drivers, one being global macro and the other local supply, they both demand a strategy of extreme patience right now.
It is all about setting the stage, positioning yourself for the next major movement, and not reacting emotionally to the immediate and often misleading headlines and initial price pumps.
The ultimate rewards in this environment are not going to go to the reactive. They're going to go to those who wait for confirmed trends.
Whether those confirmations are macroeconomic shifts, like liquidity actually pooling back into institutional funds, or technical ones, like a high volume breakout above that crucial $724 ceiling on BCH.
We talked about the internal conflict created by the technical models, specifically that Livermore speculative model and its incredible mathematically derived $200,000 target for Bitcoin, despite all the immediate grounded macroeconomic headwinds we identified.
So here's a provocative thought for you to chew on. If we stick with the view that the current macro environment is this late cycle plateau, defined by scattered liquidity and policy uncertainty, what kind of unforeseen global event, something completely outside the usual financial shock playbook, not a typical economic crisis, what would be powerful enough to instantly ignite all that scattered liquidity and validate the most aggressive technical models like that 200K Livermore prediction?
What external force, political, technological, maybe even geological, could possibly break the pattern of historical lag and structural inefficiency, forcing the market to react in days instead of that historically required 375-day time frame?
Yeah, think about what could simultaneously resolve all the policy uncertainty and force all that sideline capital into risk assets overnight.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into market liquidity and the critical cycle reset underway for Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash.
We hope this detailed analysis helps you approach the next few months with patience, with discipline, and a highly discerning eye for confirmed structural signals instead of just chasing the quick guess.
We appreciate you taking the time for this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious and stay patient.